This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You're listening to the Gold Derby Show on the Gold Derby Podcast Network. Welcome back to Gold Derby. I'm Christopher Rosen, joined by Joyce Ng. Joyce, what a week it has been. We saw West Side Story on Monday.
Was it Monday? Oh, no, you saw him. I saw it Tuesday.
And the Nightmare Alley on Wednesday. We're recording this on Thursday.
Yes.
It's been a long week.
A very long week. But it's also sort of the end of the road-ish, because Nightmare Alley was the last big thing.
Yeah, it's true. At least for, I mean, we'll see. We'll probably see Spider-Man, I guess, but I don't think that's going to be
the best picture. I would love to put it in my top 10, but I probably won't.
But yeah, so Nightmare Alley and West Side Story, the last two major Oscar contenders, finally screened this week. I felt like I saw so many people at both of those screenings. And it seems like based on Twitter reactions, everyone has seemingly seen these movies now. They just were like, make sure everybody sees them, and that's it. There's no like...
Well, they also had to like get it out for everyone, because now December is also Critics Awards.
That's right. So we're recording this on Thursday. New York Film Critics Circle starts their, kicks things off tomorrow on Friday with their picks for Best Picture. But Joyce, I want a West Side Story. I want to hear, tell me what you think. I loved it. I was fully...
This is like your new baby. Every week you have a new movie, you're standing.
Every Chris Tapley, who used to do award stuff, he tweeted, I saw that he had like, he was like Oscar pundits after every movie. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oprah Winfrey being like, and you get a car and
you get a car. The recency bias is real.
Yeah. I was like, I feel seen. That being said, and I know I've said multiple times on this every week, I'm like, oh, I love that movie. Really love West Side Story. I was extremely excited by it. It was great. I was very into it. What did you think?
I enjoyed it as well. Probably not as much as you did, but it is a very good movie, very well made. It's probably one of like Spielberg's like best made movies in a while. I really like Bridge of Spies.
Same. Bridge of Spies is great.
Yeah.
I think because of the spectacle of this, I like this more, but it's definitely...
He's like... It's also kind of nice because he's talked so long about like wanting to direct the musical, and like, you know, this was his dream come true basically. And he finally did it, and he did a really good job. And this, you know, this is like a beloved classic, an Oscar winning best picture from 60 years ago when it won 10 out of 11 categories. So there's like, you know, a lot of pressure, and he delivered. And he, you know, I'm not, you know, like a huge like musical person. I haven't seen the original film in the decades, like probably since like the late 90s, really. So I have very like faint memory of the original film, but I know like that, you know, they changed some things and reassigned, you know, some songs. But it's like a refreshing update, I would say.
Yeah, one of the things I laughed at when we went in is on the ticket. I don't know if you had this on yours. It was like had the review embargo, which was
Thursday,
like, and then it was like don't spoil anything. And it's like the movie's 60 years old. And then after watching it, I was like, well, there are some things I think that you would count as spoilers.
I mean, like plot wise, there's nothing to spoil, because it's also an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. So
Tony still dies in this version. Yeah. He does not go, there's no change on anything that happens with regard to that. And there's no spoiler alert for that. I'm sorry.
If you're not familiar with this, like, just please leave.
But no, I was like, so I had actually, so I, I've watched it twice in the last year. We watched it like last year, and then I watched it recently because I was like, oh, I want to rewatch before I see it. And so having that context for me, there are a lot of small tweaks and changes that the Tony Kushner script makes and that Spielberg made that go beyond just like the obvious of like casting like, you know, Latina actors in these roles instead of Natalie Wood playing Maria, which is like good. So, there's a lot of small changes. And one of the things I really appreciated in the second watching it after rewatching the original is that there's not a lot of like context or explanation about like any of the relationships, really. The original is just like, you'll figure it out. And there is value to that, but I appreciated that this version was like, went a little deeper into like Tony and Riff's relationship, went like a little further into like the Jets and the Sharks and like what they're actually fighting over and like the context of the city and all those things. I was greatly impressed. I don't know. I mean, like, it's a couple of things. You're right. It's like a gorgeous looking movie. I feel like it could get like a ton, certainly in the conversation for most nominations, I would predict, maybe, you know, in there. I'd say Dune and maybe Nightmare Alley, we could talk about later, and like West Side Story potentially have like a potential for double digits, let's say. So that was like good. And then I don't know, I think like we've been talking about like Power of the Dog is like the best picture frontrunner. I think we both still have it in there at first. I did not switch to anything else. I don't think you did either. It seems like the critical consensus and like a movie that like everyone can agree on, but I am now after West Side Story. And I know I said this recently about like, Don't Look, I'm like, maybe like, it's definitely a crowd pleaser. It's definitely a movie that people will love watching. And maybe this is like the avatar to Power of the Dog's Hurt Locker, which doesn't mean it'll win, but I mean, maybe that's like the two movies that will be competing most of all at the Oscars for Best Picture.
Yeah. I mean, I think I moved it into second or third. I don't remember what I did. I updated everything this morning. I don't remember what I did.
We saw so much. You had to.
I know. Yeah. I don't think it necessarily like needs to win because it's a crowd pleaser, but this does feel like something that most people really like and enjoy and feel passionate about, which I don't know you can say about a lot of, or several of like the other contenders. It's like they're, you know, like admired and respected, but yeah, like I think, you know, similar to like being the Ricardos in a way, not that I think like that will like win Best Picture, but there was kind of like an underestimation of this. It's like, oh, he's like redoing West Side Story. Like, is it really going to be better? Like, a lot of people love the first film, you know, even though they're, you know, in hindsight, there's, you know, some problems with it, but you know, that was a film of its era. So, and you know, he delivered. So I think that when you exceed people's expectations like that, I think, it's easier to be kind of like in that conversation of, oh, it could win, but it's still like December 2nd.
So. Yeah. I don't want to say it's going to win. I couldn't go that far, but I think you're 100. I love that you're saying that. I totally agree. I was watching it. It was definitely one of those movies where you could just feel people being like, I totally underestimated why we all thought this, or I'll speak.
Yeah. Like, remember when it was announced, it's like, why are they reteaming? This is the third movie together, Kushner and Spielberg. Like, why are they reteaming to do West Side Story?
Right. And it just felt like, you know, why we underestimated it. Sure. I like, why would I doubt Steven Spielberg, I guess, is a question I'll be asking myself. But I was like, not that I wasn't looking forward to it, but I definitely went in thinking like, why are we doing this? And then watching, and you're just like, oh, this is why. And it's incredible. And it's staged really well. I would say one thing I think that West Side Story has is a great, it got potential to have, what would you say, Joyce, from an acting standpoint, above the line? If we have picture and director, I put him in for director also.
Because I did too.
I think it's like going to be, it's his first musical, and you'd be hard pressed to watch and not come away with the idea that he should be directing. He should have maybe done another one at some point because he's like really good at it.
It's kind of like he should have been directing musicals this whole time. Like what took him so long?
Yeah, it's just the energy and the way he stages the numbers are really awesome. But yeah, I was also blown away by the performances. So watching it, I was most impressed. I think we both were with Mike Feist, who plays Riff. Would you say Feist?
It's Mike Feist.
Yes. Mike Feist.
Mike Feist.
Another name I'll say wrong 3 billion times between now and March.
Well, as I like told my friend, I was like, he was the best part of the movie. And then he was like, how do you pronounce his name? And I said, oh, like Heist. And he's like, oh, like Time Heist. I was like, yes, Time Heist.
Nailed it.
Exactly. I know. This is our second Marvel reference already. So, but yeah, no, he was amazing as Riff. And honestly, you know, that category is all over the place, supporting actor. I would completely support him sweeping and winning it all. Like,
I can see it happening.
Yeah. Like Riff dies. You know this. This is not a spoiler.
No.
But I did not want him to die. Like, because I knew he would be gone for the rest of the movie. And I just knew like the energy of the movie would be so different. I mean, obviously it would be different after the Rumble anyway, but like, every time he was on screen, it was electric. And I feel like such a local talking about him. Like I knew going in, he was, you know, a Tony nominated Broadway star for Dear Evan Hansen, but I'd never seen him in anything. And he was great. And he also looks like he belongs in the 50s, like that face.
it's really incredible. That's one of the, you know, with regard to the whole project, I think like when you're like the casting is so important, because rather than like go, like you could imagine a version of this where it's like every role is filled with like an A-list star, right? Like just like regardless of singing talent, be like, oh, we can figure out how to make him sing and the dancing will cut around. And this, because he's got Mike Feist as Riff and Ariana DeBose, who plays Anita, and, you know, like just David Alvarez plays Bernardo. These are like Broadway performers who are incredibly talented. And that like opens up the whole movie, because then you don't have to cut around their dancing. Like you're watching them do this stuff. There's like Riff is Mike Weiss says is great. Just there's so many great scenes, but he's part of Be Cool, which I think it's a little confusing because I've never actually seen the stage version, but I've seen the movie, obviously. In the movie, that's not done by Riff.
Yeah. I think that's after he dies.
Yeah. And so I guess but in the musical, in the stage musical, based on at least the profile of Tony Kushner that I read in the Times, it sounds like that this in the musical Riff does do it. Cause I think he like reordered it based on like the original musical. And so like you get Riff doing Be Cool. Please tell me if I'm wrong about all this, but anyway, in the movie, this version, he does Be Cool and it's awesome. And it just is like, oh my gosh, he's so good. And and there's like a very elaborate dancing going on during that. And that's one of the scenes actually where you've met Ansel Elgort is Tony, not a Broadway star, but he actually acquits himself pretty well, I think, as a dancer, I would say. He's actually a solid dancer.
I would actually say I was more impressed by his singing and dancing than his actual like acting performance.
Yeah, he's quite good at both.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, those songs are hard to sing. And I feel like a lot of people, like the snippets that have been released of songs, people are like coming for him for his singing, because obviously like Rachel Zegler is amazing, but he acquits himself well with those songs. They're Sondheim songs, not easy to sing.
No. So Mike Feist, I agree. I don't know if he's in the prediction center just yet, but I will definitely move him in when we have him added. I think
we need to make him happen. This is a Mike Feist stan account now.
What's funny is when you watch the original, Rust Hamblin obviously famously played Riff, and it's like, I forgot. It's like Riff is a humongous part. He's like a huge part of the opening and basically the first 2/3 of the movie. And so like, it's like, he definitely, in this movie, he just pops up. Rust Hamblin, obviously a classic performance too. I think people really love his performance. I saw that Amber Tamblyn, who is Rust Hamblin's daughter and a famous actress, went with Rust to see the, this
and she had
version.
An amazing custom shirt. Yeah,
really cool. So Mike Feist in, and then so one not a surprise necessarily was we talked about her when we've talked about supporting actresses. Ariana DeBose playing Anita obviously won Rita Moreno an Oscar 60 years ago. So I mean, people were expecting that performance to be good because the character is so good, and you obviously get like so many showcase scenes when you play Anita. She's awesome in the movie. Absolutely incredible. I thought like explodes off the screen, does everything you want. Really good. maybe a surprise, certainly for me, I don't know about you, is that Rita Moreno is like in it a lot and left the movie with a lot of people singing her praises as a potential nominee and also maybe even a winner, which would make her like the oldest winner ever. And obviously just
Oldest nominee. She's going to be 90 next week, the day after this opens in theaters. So like legendary behavior, really.
Yeah.
I felt the same way about Ariana. We talked about like she could get it just because like that role is so baby and she has America and everything. And then, you know, like just her like final scene, like devastating, like the way that was also staged. Rita, I guess, you know, when she was like announced as like coming on board as like a reimagined version of Doc, like she's Valentina, Doc's widow in the movie. So I think like maybe people thought like she'd just be more of like a cameo or something, but she does have like several like good scenes, and then she gets to sing. they give her somewhere to sing instead of having Tony and Maria sing it.
Yes.
So that's like her big like emotional moment at the end as well. So that category, I think, is like there's a lot of contenders, but I we've talked about this before. Like it feels like the top three is probably Katrina, Kirsten, and Ingenue. And then it's like those other two slots. So maybe like I put them both in for now.
I also put them both in.
I also didn't want to like think about it too much. So I was like, I'll just put them in for now.
I feel like I could definitely see both of them getting in. And if one of them doesn't, I think it would maybe be Ariana, only because like Rita Moreno is like Rita Moreno. But I think Ariana is like incredibly good. And you can make an argument that she could actually end up being like a front runner to win. If not for Rita Moreno, I don't know. I mean, I have them both in. I could see them like, I guess we'll start seeing like, but all the reviews have like praised Rita. And I think the narrative, the story, like it's weird. It's like the story of that would be so great for the Oscars. And I'm almost like, I know, like, you know, like imagine like, not only does she win or get nominated, but then if she ever won, just like she, no other Hispanic actress has ever, or actor has ever won an Oscar. Right. So
And then like literally 6 years later for the same title, not the same role, but like, I don't also remember when she presented like 3 years ago, she wore her dress, the same dress.
Just incredible. And I mean, obviously like no one, few have as much goodwill as Rita Moreno.
I will say, remember like last year, like all the narrative around like Ellen Burstyn possibly being like the oldest acting nominee. And also like Sophia Loren possibly coming back, like two like legends, like Rita, and like they didn't happen, but Rita has a stronger film. Like their films were not strong.
Yeah. You can make the case where West Side Story ends up with like 10 nominations pretty easily. And like, then does Rita get in? I don't know. It'd be very interesting. Like we said, well, Best Supporting Actress is like just wild. And so is Best Supporting Actor. So I think there's a lot of room there for them. And then you mentioned Rachel Zegler. I'll be honest. Recency bias, I put her in for like 30 seconds and as Best Actress. I think she's a contender for sure. She's incredibly good in the movie. I thought she's got a great voice. And I think she really, you know, Natalie Wood played that role in the original, famously not a white actress, so not playing a Puerto Rican as Maria is in the film. And you know, I mean, she also didn't do her own singing. So, and she's also much older than Rachel Zegler. I felt like having a age appropriate Maria who is doing her own singing was really important for the story. It made it feel like a lot more tragic at times, and like she just does so. It's just really good in it. And I was like very impressed.
Yeah.
Again, like Best Actress is like impossible.
And her eyes are really expressive.
Yeah.
So.
And like Spielberg does that like Spielberg face thing.
Right? Yeah.
It's like, so yeah, that's West Side. So yeah. And the only, no original song. They didn't add like a throw in a freebie song to get a nomination. Just like fully old school. I was trying to count it up in my head. I was like cinematography, costumes, maybe production design. Adapted screenplay, picture, director,
sound.
That's six, sound would be seven. And then like three acting nominees, that gets you to 10 right there. I mean,
listen, the original only had 2 acting nominations.
Right. So I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, we didn't mention David Alvarez. He plays Bernardo. George Chakiris won Oscar for playing Bernardo. I really loved Bernardo I loved David Alvarez's performance. And I thought Bernardo was actually, the way they reconceived that character slightly, I thought was like really cool. Mm-hmm. But I think the problem is that because Riff and Mike Feist is so, just so good, it almost makes it seem like harder for David Alvarez to get traction. Because if you're looking at the supporting actors, you're going to be like, man,
what if they're the ones who are going to pull, or West Side Story is the one that's going to pull the supporting double double and not Belfast?
It really could. I mean, you know, I would not be, it would not be upsetting to me. He's so good. Like, David Alvarez is really charming and like super compelling.
Yeah. Like I also didn't want him to die. Like,
no, you really like him. It was like a bummer when that scene comes. Cause I'm like, oh man, these guys,
it's like, you know, it's coming. And then it's just like, oh,
Joyce. So that's West Side Story. The reviews were out on today, which is Thursday, and everyone, a lot of strong reviews. I think it had a very high Metacritic score.
Yeah. When I looked this morning, yeah, I think it was at like 87 on Metacritic and like 94 in Rotten Tomatoes.
So that bodes well for, I mean, obviously I think it, well, I'm not ready to say what, if it would win, and I haven't moved it in front. I would be actually stunned if it doesn't get nominated for Best Picture, especially with 10 nominees. Like, it just seems like unheard of the way the response was. And yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. So now we can move on.
I think it's like top 5.
I think it's top 5 also. Yeah.
I don't know how much, like, you know, box office wise, I don't really care, you know, but I don't know how well it'll do, but I think this is like a movie, like the people who matter, AKA the voters, will like.
Yes. So. I was also wondering, I was talking about this with friends the other day. Like, I have no idea how much money it could make at the bottom. It doesn't matter. Right, whatever.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, I have no idea. Couldn't even hazard a guess. You could tell me it makes like 50 million or 10 million. I'd be like, okay, like,
you know, nothing surprising, maybe it'll be like box office queen Lady Gaga. I don't know.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I was like, House of Gucci got 20 million with Lady Gaga, the queen, helping drive it along. So that was on Monday for me and Tuesday for you. And then last night we both saw Wednesday night, Nightmare Alley up at Alice Tully Hall, the big premiere. I had Questlove sitting a few seats down from me, name dropper.
You saw everybody and I saw nobody.
And I saw our pal Jeremy Strong from Succession with Nicholas Braun. They were together at the event.
He didn't burn him. He brought him and said, yeah. And
one of my friends said he saw Cherry Jones there, which means we were so close to a Turnhaven reunion.
Oh my God.
Yes. And I'm sure we'll talk about Succession later.
But I know. But you know, it's fitting, not a spoiler, there's a rabbit in the movie. So.
Yes. So Nightmare Alley, another highly, like a very anticipated drama, Guillermo del Toro's follow-up to Shape of Water. Obviously that won Best Picture and Best Director in 2017. It came out, so 2018 Oscars, right? What you think, Joyce? What were your big top line takeaways for Nightmare Alley?
It's a very, very pretty film, like all of GDT's films. I put it in first for production design. Cate Blanchett's office, man. Wow.
Amazing.
Very pretty cinematography. Great. Like all the techs are like cureless, really. And Alexander Desplat did not score. Nathan Johnson, who did Knives Out, scored it instead. I think it was like a scheduling conflict, but the score is really good as well.
Yep.
I agree. I found it to be long. And you know how I feel about long movies, but this like House of Gucci, I felt it.
Yes, and, you definitely feel it. Yeah.
And unlike House of Gucci, where I felt it at the end because it's like the third act drag and like Gaga's gone for like a lot of it, this you feel at the beginning, mm-hmm, which I think it's rougher, and it's just like a lot of like setup. And so I've never read the book or seen the 47 version, but like everything I've read about like the title in general is that like things really start when Cate Blanchett shows up. Yes. And this movie is like a real slow burn that never really fully ignites. And like Cate brings some spark. I'm going to completely run this fire metaphor into the ground now, but like she brings some spark to it. Cause then you get like the actual plot going and it fuels this like late third act fire. And a lot happens in like, what, 20 minutes at the end?
It does feel like a ton. It really speeds through a lot of like, oh my God, moments towards the
end. Yeah, like it gets like really exciting at the end, but then it gets like extinguished and then the film is over.
Right. So I would totally agree. I agree with you. I think like truly peerless production, everything. Like if it reminded me a little bit of Dune on that front where it was just like every department is just like firing on all cylinders where you're just mm-hmm. like, oh my God, the score rules, the sound rules, the costumes are amazing, the production design, the cinematography, hair, makeup, like down the line. And I really think it could like I also moved it to top in production design. It seems like just incredible stuff. I could really see it winning, right? Like no problem with that, even though that seems like it'll be a deep category as well. And yeah, it was one of the, I forget who said it, but somebody was like Shape of Water was a lot more, it weirdly more accessible, even though it was about a woman having sex with a fish monster. It just had like a little more of a warmer heart. I mean, this story is not a warm and cuddly story.
No, it's pretty dark. Bleak, which is yeah. fine, but I yeah. think it like cohesively, it doesn't quite come together, or it takes too long to get there. Yeah.
You have a. You mentioned Cate Blanchett. I loved her when she comes in. She's great. And like, I think a lot of the reviews were like reviews and responses seemingly at this point, I just cracked me up. I'm like, everybody reviews everything. They're like, it's a review embargo, but you can still tweet about it. And then
I know it's like reviews. A tweet view. Yeah,
sure. Whatever.
Everyone has it scheduled for the embargo time.
Exactly. But Cate Blanchett was the top line. I feel like headline about it. Like everybody loved her in it. She really is like, kind of a perfect in the role. And like, I don't know, I think she's probably the best shot at a nomination for supporting actress. We had talked about how they are decided to run her in supporting and Rooney Mara in lead. I mean, and at the time we're like, that just clears room for Kate in supporting. And now having seen it, I would say that does, though. I think Rooney Mara is actually really solid in it. She doesn't have a large role for a lead performance, at least.
No, she's like a borderline. Like if they had yeah. decided to run all the women in supporting, yeah. I would have been like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So she definitely has like the second most screen time after Bradley.
That's true. And Bradley obviously is great. We were texting briefly last night. We got home so late. It was a long evening.
I got home at midnight.
But we were texting about it. And Bradley's Cooper's last scene, he's good in the whole thing. And then the last scene is just like really, really good. And I think people will leave the movie just like incredibly impressed with the performance. I didn't move him in. I haven't had him in for best actor. I know he's been like a popular, like fifth, sixth pick seemingly in our combined odds. Mm-hmm. But I could see people like being really wowed by him. A lot of the tweets were like, oh, this is going to be his eighth nomination or whatever, you know, overall, or, you know, maybe he could win. I still think if he's going to win it for anything, it would be Licorice Pizza this year. But and I don't think this performance only helps that performance, I think, get him in as a supporting actor. But yeah, he's also really good. And then the ensemble is actually awesome. I really loved David Strathairn, who is in it in the beginning part. And Willem Dafoe has a more of a smaller role in the beginning. And even like in like really small part, like Mary Steenburgen has like two scenes.
Oh my God. Like MVP, truly.
So good. Like, and Tim Blake Nelson has like one scene towards the end. That's great. And Richard Jenkins playing kind of against type and against like what he did in Shape of Water. Toni Collette, I found really great. Ron Perlman is in it. It's like a pretty solid ensemble of like very well-liked actors. Clifton Collins shows up for like two scenes. So yeah, I could see it. I mean, I think it'll be a player. I don't know. I mean, who knows, but we'll see. I could see it being like a underdog contender for like an ensemble nomination from SAG maybe, or, you know, a best picture, like a lower end best picture nominee. But I think the Craft stuff is going to be pretty wild. I do think it could get upwards of 10 nominations, but I don't know if Del Toro could squeeze into director. Cause I just feel like with Spielberg, having like drop West Side Story and then Campion and then PTA and Denny for Dune, Kenneth Branagh, and on and on, it's getting crowded. So I don't know about him getting in.
Yeah. And I think like with the mixed reception, I think it's also like a genre film, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. It's not about, he made a point before the movie, Guillermo del Toro spoke a little bit and he was like, oh, I want to, this is his first movie without monsters, but the real monsters are men, Joyce. I don't know if you got that from the movie.
I heard.
Yeah. I had not seen the original either. I was talking to one of my friends who saw it. He actually just watched it. And he said like, there's some changes. Like the original has more of a studio mandated happy ending. It seems this one ends on a pretty dark note, which I preferred based on what I read about the original ending, even though I haven't seen the original. So bad job out of me. But yeah, it sounds like a lot of like, it's very, if you've seen the original, like a lot of the beats will be familiar. But I think some of it is like remixed sort of like West Side Story style with the Spielberg.
Yeah. I think you know, a lot of people, just like anecdotally found it long. It's like 2.5. Right. Yeah.
It was actually, I think it's 140 minutes maybe.
Okay. Yeah. And I could see like some people not getting too into it or just, you know, or maybe like, they're just like looking for like the Cate Blanchett part, like act two. And like when that starts up, cause that really like gets things rolling. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say if it makes it into Best Picture, it would probably be like lower tier, like maybe 9th or 10th. I also don't have him in director. And I think like Cate is its best chance for Above the Line. And I actually took her out for West Side Story, ladies.
It's true. I had her in too. And then I was like, oh, Rita Moreno.
I really like Cate is great. And she really does like light up like the film and like, you know, like things happen because of her character. And she has some great scenes with Bradley Cooper, but I also feel like she could like do this character in her sleep and she has before.
Well, it's an interesting run because she's got this and also Don't Look Up, where she plays like a bubbly morning show host. They're not very similar parts, but I wonder, I guess the funny thing was she was in Don't Look Up a lot more than I thought. And she's not in this less, but plus she doesn't come in until like the second hour. It does feel like she's not in it. You know what I mean? Like I was like, oh, she's in this less than I thought it would be. And she's in Don't Look Up more than I thought she would be. And I wonder if that'll like also like maybe split her vote a little more than I expected. Right. Cause I think people will be taken with her Don't Look Up performance, but she's also not probably getting in for that either. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like interesting. Cause like if you like subscribe to the notion that like the general public won't like respond to Nightmare Alley, then like fewer people will watch this than, you know, supposedly Don't Look Up on Netflix with this also an all-star cast, but like even more people, and it's more accessible in that everyone can watch it
right
like around the world, you know.
Right.
So it'll be more seen.
Yeah.
But she's also, you know, she has competition with like Meryl from that film.
Yes.
Who I also consider putting in.
It's true. I was thinking about this and it's just like, it's so silly because like earlier we're saying like every week I'm like, oh, this movie is good. And also like,
listen, there's nothing else to see really. So,
yeah. but also the cliche that like, oh, all the good movies come out at the end of the year. And this year I was like, oh no, like a lot of good ones came out at like Telluride and like, you know, we've seen them, but I was like, actually like the last few big movies are all like really like, none of them are outright. None of them are like an outright flop. There's no like extremely loud, incredibly close. No offense to that. Bygone.
I mean, that was still a Best Picture nominee.
And it still was a Best Picture nominee, but it wasn't good. And I was like, none of these are on that level where it's like a huge expectation and then a big disappointment.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the biggest surprise. I think this year has ended up being like incredibly strong. Like we had talked recently about how are you going to feel out of 10 nominees? And now I'm like, oh, you know what? This is like, I'd actually think there'll be like a few really good or well-reviewed movies that don't even get in even with 10 nominees. Like I think this is a good year for a 10 because there are actually probably 13 or 14 legitimate contenders for Best Picture nomination. So, and that's kind of exciting as silly as it is to sit here every week and be like, oh, this movie's great. And also to read every tweet every night, be like, actually, this is the front runner. No, you know what? This guy's going to win best. We're going to have 12 best actor winners, including Bradley Cooper. And, you know, it's just like getting out of control.
Everyone is going to get nominated. Okay.
Everyone gets nominated. This is I'm waiting for the hot take of we should expand all the nominations to 10. I got to imagine that comes soon.
Everyone gives their career best performance.
Everyone's never been better. And if we had 10 nominees, it would be absolutely perfect. Joyce, we're recording this on Thursday, so we're waiting for the NBR to announce their award. So we'll talk more about that like at a later date because they haven't done it yet and whatever. And then we have New York Film Critics tomorrow, which we briefly touched on this week in a special after school special column of Oscar experts typing, which is great. Be curious to see what they do here. In that column, we both stumped for Ben Affleck Resurrection for Last Duel in Tender Bar.
I feel like I saw the Tender Bar like 7 years ago.
Yeah, it came out. I think it was like a 2012 movie, but I'm really excited that.
Yeah, the same. Oh, yeah, totally.
For Oscars. So before we wrap up, Joyce, let's do we talked about Jeremy Strong and Nick Braun.
But I want to get their takes on Nightmare Alley.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, you know what? Jeremy probably was like super into because he's super method. And I bet you he was like very impressed with Bradley's performance. That was my thought.
Yeah.
But wow, that last episode of Succession was possibly the best one of the season. What would you say?
I mean, yes. And also like a perfect, if tapes still matter, like a perfect tape for Jeremy for the Emmys. But did you watch the episode 8 screener? No.
No, I have not yet.
I watched it, obviously. Oh boy.
So good. So a couple of things we want to talk about that episode. Again, I just feel like people watch that show. Not they don't watch it wrong, but I think it's very funny, like watching how people desperately want to root for these characters. I've fallen prey to this too, because I always said, like, oh, Jeremy's performance is so good. You kind of want Kendall to succeed. This season has done a great job of like just tearing Kendall down, both emotionally and like you feel really at the end of this last episode, which was his birthday, his 40th birthday, he seems at his lowest point, which is shocking because multiple times this season, it felt like he was at his lowest point. And now it's like, no,
this I mean, multiple times in the series, he's been at his lowest point.
And then, but yeah, like you have, like, I know there's been a lot of like, we love Kieran Culkin as Roman, despicable behavior in this episode, just really beyond the pale.
He's like on the high that like Kendall was at the beginning of the season after his like press conference, and like he's like feeling it. He got A scars for a Monday meeting. He got him to pee on the Stargo app. Okay.
Like, so good. Roman really, really taking a turn and really trying to like end up as his dad's number one boy. I would say like one of the things I love about television, and I've seen like people complaining about like this. One thing I love about television, Joyce. Now, I've seen people complaining about how like the show is like spinning its wheels, and like I've seen.
I don't think so at all. I've seen that as well, and it's
a bad take. Bad take.
Yeah. Wrong take.
Bad tweet. Bad tweet. Bad tweet. But the reason I don't think it is like that is because you actually seen Roman has grown so much, and like while his behavior towards Kendall and Shiv was especially despicable, like he's become like quite a savvy business operator. And like, if you think back to like how he was even at the start of season two, he was a joke. Like no one took him seriously.
He had to go to training.
He went to training. He's been under Jerry's tutelage seemingly. And like, he's just learned and he's like, he's got maybe the best instincts out of any of the Roy kids. Like he knows like when a deal is bad and he kind of like knows when to walk away and push. And he definitely has that killer instinct that Logan said Kendall didn't. Whether or not the A-Scars deal ends up like spinning out of his control, I think we'll see. You've seen ahead, so you don't have to say. But I was like, I do wonder if that like will end up blowing up in his face lately, because like,
I mean,
he was very confident.
Yeah. About it. Like I've said, was it last week, 2 weeks ago? I don't know. A month ago. I've always felt that Roman was the smartest sibling, even though he's like the most immature. Because people tend to think of like Shiv as the smartest one, and like she's smart, but I don't think she's the smartest. And we've talked about this before and how she like flails when things go wrong. But yeah, no, like Roman has been killing it with like Jared Mencken and Lucas Mattson back to back.
Yeah.
And yeah, like he, I like, I don't think he realizes like how I think he cares about his siblings, and like he does just kind of want to like go back to like that like bickering they used to do instead of just like fighting for like the job. And I think because like, you know, he like they're all like so emotionally stunted, he doesn't realize how much like he's actually hurting them when he like shoves his brother to the floor, you know?
Right.
Like to them, like it's still kind of like a joke because like he's still like internally, like emotionally a child. But he is like very business savvy and smart. And yeah, there'll be more development. The Ascaris is in the 8th episode. You get the crying scene, but from a different angle than was in the trailer.
Interesting. Yeah. I would love to go back after the season. I think we could Zapruder film the trailer of, because
and, like, so what was not included.
So much was not included. Like,
I'm like, we could do that to the Don't Look Up trailer too.
Truly, there's so much that's not in it. I was listening to another podcast and they were like talking about it. I forget which one, but they were like, oh, like there's a scene of like Kendall with the kids where they're like a little upset. And that doesn't seem like it's in this. In these last
the kids are in the flesh in the 8th episode. So like eight and nine okay. are in Italy for okay. Caroline's wedding, obviously.
Right.
We know that already. So yeah, so he brings the kids to Italy.
Okay.
So you see Sophie and Iverson in 8.
Finally, instead of on an iPad.
Yeah,
Roman.
Not the rabbit thing, though.
The rabbit's gotta be dead. The other thing with Roman, I would say, is that like, and again, this is why I'm like, the show's gonna like Shiv this season has made every bad choice and wrong decision and totally thinks she's like the smartest person and is so, so dumb sometimes.
And then she couldn't even act happy when Tom wasn't going to jail.
Correct. And like, one of the things I think you've seen, they've slowly done. And a thing that I love about the show is they're just very subtle. Like they just drop it in. Like she does not take Roman seriously. She never has. And like, so yeah, he does have a chip on his shoulder towards her. And like, that's why he is so gleeful to trash her when he gets all his deals done and like his dad's
And like Logan included him in the buyout for Kendall and not Shiv. And like, obviously that sticks in her craw as it would.
Yeah.
So we
didn't even, and then we didn't talk about Tom and Greg, a great Tom and Greg stuff. Tom now not going to prison, Joyce, maybe.
But such an amazing arc just in Greg's office.
And then in Greg's office, he flips the desk over. It's just incredible scene. So good. I loved it so much. And Greg's reaction to that was awesome. And then you had Greg with Comfrey at the party, just an all-time Greg scene where he's doing like a Southern accent for no reason. It's just so weird.
It's like so good. I don't know what was happening there. And then I love like the best part was like after like Kendall tells him like, no, you can't ask her out. And then he goes over to like large screen of him and he just like lightly taps.
Tapping the LCD screen. Or
see, that's
screen.
What like I love about show because it like subverts like all your expectations of it. And I think this is also why some people feel like it's just spinning its axes and like doing the same thing this season. Because I feel like after the season 2 finale, people expected this like huge showdown between like Kendall and Logan, like maybe like the investigation like flares up, they go to court and like all this stuff. And that hasn't happened. And I like it that way. Like it's not about like the mechanics of like the business. Like, I don't understand like half the stuff they talk about. Half. Like shareholders, like what? I don't know. Like, I just know that like, you know, Stewie and the Sandys, like, you know, like they could have like taken control of like, it went to a vote, you know? But like, that's not what's important to the show. Like it's the relationships and like those dynamics are important. And like, there's been so many developments to the season about that. And I think people just kind of wanted that like all out war for the company this season. Yeah. And like, they basically kind of like, you know, it's kind of over like with like in the beginning of this episode when they're just like, oh, like I heard from like, you know, Jerry's like, I heard from DOJ, like we'll probably just like have to pay a settlement and that's it. Yeah.
Pretty great. I love that too. I was like, oh, I just kind of love that I love when they like shows do that and it's just like brushed away one thing because it feels also real because like they probably wouldn't face any kind of repercussions.
Yeah. Or, the Raisin is still in office.
Right. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. Now, Joyce, one thing I want to ask you before we go. Well, I saw Jay Cameron Smith was giving an interview and she said the ending is like, a shocking and heartbreaking, right? Or something like that. But she said something along those lines.
Yeah. So I,
what's your theory?
I don't know. I think a lot of people's theory is that like a death is involved.
Yes, I agree. So who do you think would die?
I, I mean, I guess like the most obvious answer would be Logan. And also you have, you know, Ace Gars asking like, when is Logan dying? Like just flat out there, you know?
Right.
But it could also be like someone like minor. I think if they would kill someone, I don't think they would go like super minor and irrelevant.
I don't either. And I don't think they would, I just have a hard time believing they're going to kill any of these key people in the family. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you could go. I mean, I've seen people like speculate is Jeremy Strong is like won an Emmy. He could win another Emmy this year. He's done everything.
Well, I will say in the 8th episode, it features the scene that Brian Cox has talked about in all like the preseason interviews of like a one-on-one between like Kendall and Logan that like ended with like Jeremy crying when they were done. So
that's, can't wait for that. I'm like, I don't know, if you kill Kendall off, I think you end up like, it just unmoors the show in a way that would really surprise me. I think Brian Cox, they talked about, they would have wanted to kill him off in the first season, Logan. And then they realized the drama.
I mean, he was like in a hospital bed from what, like 2-3 episodes.
Right. And it's like the drama is that Logan is there and that like all these kids are vying for his affection and his approval. And he just is like, no, I'm not doing that. And also I could change the rules whenever I want. And you all have to jump and follow with me. So it feels like taking him off the board would be weird. Roman and Shiv, I don't think you could do, because can you imagine Succession without Kieran Culkin and Sarah Snook? I can't, I just can't do it. So I'm like, if somebody's going to go, would it be like a Carl Frank or Jerry? Possibly. Did they kill Jerry off?
Imagine if they kill Jerry off.
So if they kill Jerry off, that would be wild, but you would end up, that would affect Roman greatly because he obviously like does have some weird love for Jerry, like in his personal life, either as a mother or like a potential like romantic partner or whatever. It's like a weird, just a mix. You'd also open up the CEO spot again, and they'd have to like, again, find a CEO. Right. Between the three kids or Logan again, maybe after the investigation, it just would be so like wild.
They're cleared.
Or is it Ace Gars? Does he swoop in and become CEO? These are my speculative thoughts, but I was like, maybe it's Jerry who actually does die. There's no reason to believe that other than just that anybody dies, because this is not that show. It's not a show that kills people off.
Or, you know, she could just be completely overselling it as well.
Right. That's the other thing. It could be like a Paul Bettany when he was like, I had a great scene.
But also that was like epic trolling because it was just himself. And yes. I respect that so much. And they should have given him the Emmy for that.
He should have won. But I'm just saying, it could be something like that. It could be like a legitimate thing. It could just be her trying to like jump up, you know, enthusiasm for the finale, which is in 2 weeks. But I don't know. If somebody dies, I'm
maybe it's just like another waiter dying again.
I mean, it could be. Yeah, sure.
They're at another wedding, so.
It could also be Sandy with a Y, because he's obviously in ill health.
That's true. Yeah.
In the show.
Possibly syphilis, the MySpace of STDs. So.
Incredible stuff. I don't think it would be Tom. I don't think it'll be Greg, obviously. It could be James. I mean, Greg, it could be James Cromwell, right? Logan's brother. That's another option. I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. If you know anything, don't say anything.
I don't know anything because they only sent 8. So
do you think they'll send 9? Do you think they'll send the finale?
They said they weren't going to. So I don't
think they will either. Yeah. Joyce, we can talk about. I mean, Succession's still good, as it turns out. And I checked. It's not eligible for Best Picture, unfortunately.
I mean, we talked about this before. Why isn't it eligible for Best Picture? It's a 9-hour movie.
So good. All right, Joy, see you next time. Bye.
For all things Hollywood competition and award season, head to goldderby.com. Follow us on social media at goldderby.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.